Welcome to Fun and Fundraising, everybody, the podcast where we talk with people behind top nonprofit galas and signature fundraising events to showcase how they positively transform their communities. I'm your host, Rob Giardinelli, and today I'm really excited to have two very special guests on. We have Andy Smith and Paul von Wupperfeld, and they are the co-chairs for the upcoming Art Ball 24 benefiting the Dallas Museum of Art. And for anyone not familiar with the DMA Art Ball, and DMA is an acronym we'll be using quite a bit today, and that's short for Dallas Museum of Art, is it really is one of the biggest nights for the arts from a nonprofit gala perspective in the state of Texas every year. So I'm really excited to, you know, be talking with Andy and Paul. And not only that, but they are spouses co-chairing an event. So it's always fun to talk with both halves of a couple that, you know, are co-chairing an event that really makes a big difference in their community. And with that, Andy, Paul, welcome. And we're really excited to have you both on as guests today.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having us in your program.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you both. And, you know, I'd love for Andy to field this first question. You know, can you talk a little bit about what the mission of the Dallas Museum of Art is?
Sure, Rob. So I think, you know, certainly what it is by the title. It's an art museum, but really it's much more than that. How I see the Dallas Museum of Art, it's really for everyone in the city to experience the art. They've done such a great job with opening their doors and really getting such a diverse mix of folks in our community to come in, and also taking art out to where people are. So they're really looking to place art around the city and in our diverse community here, looking at also at how they build great collections. So, you know, acquiring art for future use and viewing by the city, and putting on really groundbreaking exhibitions. And one of the things that has most impressed me, I think, about the DMA is our director, Augustine Arteaga, has worked to, I mentioned diversifying audiences coming in, but also his curatorial staff, where he has, I forget the percentage, but it's some huge percentage of the curatorial staff that he's diversified since he's been director. And I think the thought by that is the more diverse the curatorial staff is, the more diverse then your exhibitions become. And so we had exhibitions, they had a Cartier exhibition, but they've also had what people might have heard about, or Dior, but an exhibition by an LGBTQ community, Angel, I forget his last name, but current exhibition right now about a young gay man who had a very sadly short life, but he had some really fabulous paintings that came out. So also the Islamic art collection they've launched. So my point is, they're doing really groundbreaking exhibitions, but also ones that are diverse to really help, I think, also establish the DMA as one of our leading art institutions, not only in the U.S., but around the world. And looking at ways to also engage people through creativity and connections to make our city a more vibrant, thriving place to live. So that's a really long answer to your question. So I hope I didn't just now eat up all the time for the podcast.
Absolutely not. No, it was really good to kind of explain that. And really, art, you know, the best art institutions really do embrace diversity. So I really admire you for doing that. And, you know, Paul, I would love for you to talk about how you initially got involved with the museum.
Sure. Well, you know, being in Dallas now for going on, you know, 26 years, I mean, the Dallas Museum of Art is such an important part of our community. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it is the anchor for the nation's largest urban arts district. When the DMA moved into downtown and, you know, really got the arts district going, it planted the seeds for a number of other museums and organizations to move in there. So, you know, while you have the DMA come in as an anchor, you then have the Nasher Sculpture Center. You've got the Dallas Symphony, the Opera, the Holocaust and Human Rights Museum. They're all part of, you know, a large urban arts district that makes it a destination for all of Dallas to come down to. We've got an urban park there that, where they bridged over one of the freeways. So it's really stitched together the downtown and the uptown parts of the city. So it's really exciting. Andy talked about the museum itself, but it's part of something much bigger than just itself. And it's really been a leader in terms of presenting, art and the arts community to the city of Dallas.
You know, I'm really glad that you brought up, one, the fact that Dallas is the largest, it's the largest core, largest arts district or arts core, of any city in the United States. And I think people may be a little surprised at that, comparing Dallas to maybe cities like New York. But when you listed all those organizations, every single one of them is truly world class and truly at the top of their game in various sorts of genres. And, what I have always appreciated about the Dallas Arts District is that it's not just about one medium of art. It's about multiple mediums of art, including, things like even the National Sculpture Garden, which is art combined with nature. So, I mean, it really does it reflects kind of like what Andy was referring to with the diversity, not just the diversity of community, but also a diversity of art. And, to me, the pinnacle of it is the DMA, just because of all the world, truly world-class and truly epic. And I know you touched upon the Dior exhibit, Andy, but that truly was one of the most magnificent exhibits I've ever seen anywhere in any museum. And it was only in two cities in the United States. And luckily, Dallas was, able to secure that with the provenance of DMA. And, with that, I know Paul had just mentioned kind of, his origins and background of getting involved with DMA. How did you get involved with DMA? And I'd like to hear which one of you, was first, in of the two of you to be involved with DMA.
Well, probably, I don't know, since Paul's grandparents lived in Dallas and he was up here visiting as a kid, he probably beats me from the time perspective. But my first real involvement with the DMA, other than when I was in college, I went to SMU. And so when I was in college, I visited a few times, but I really didn't, honestly, looking back on it, take full advantage of the opportunities that were here from an arts perspective when I was in college. But when I began work on the philanthropic side of Texas Instruments in 2008 is when I really got involved with the DMA. Through TI and the DMA have a very long history together. I think looking back on our records, I remember I was doing this a few years ago before I gave some remarks in an event, and our records for support of the DMA go back to the 50s. And our company's bit was founded in 1930. I'm sure there's some support before then, but we don't have records for it. But the DMA is one of our longest served arts organizations that we support. And one of our founders, Eugene McDermott, he and his wife, Margaret, were really instrumental in getting the DMA to the stature that it is now. I mean, Mrs. McDermott sadly passed away a few years ago, but her collection is now part of the DMA's permanent collection. And as a matter of fact, there's a new exhibition that'll be opening next week. It's called Impressionist Revolution from Monet to Matisse. And some of her and Mr. McDermott's paintings will be in that exhibition. But so, through TI's involvement in sponsoring exhibitions, ongoing support from the TI Foundation is how my involvement came. And we've also, I should say too, involvement is not just monetary. It's been some of our leaders and serving on the board of the DMA. And really, it's not just that giving a grant. It's really that deeper level of involvement over many, many years, and really have been just amazed at the work that I've seen and to see the evolution. So it's been, 16 years now, I guess, I've been on this side at TI, and to have seen the change in the DMA over that time. To see all the great work that they're doing. I mentioned about earlier. It's been really, really impressive.
I'm really glad that you brought up you know, being involved in both, and we talk about this often on our program here, you know, not only the financial capital, but also the human capital and the people, you know, the people putting in the work. And that actually, you know, I'd like to hear, and I actually like you both to chime in, because I know you both have a background with Texas Instruments. I'd love to hear what makes for a successful collaboration from a corporate sponsorship perspective between a big organization and a high-level organization like TI and a world-class facility such as the Dallas Museum of Art. And Paul, I'd like for you to go first, and then Andy, I'd like for you to chime in.
Sure. Well, I mean, absolutely, you need to have your employees down there in person. You know, they need to be able to come down to see the art, to go through the exhibitions, to bring their families down for that. You know, so that it's not just a matter of handing money to an organization. It's actually bringing people in. And that dovetails so well with what the DMA is doing, because it's really all about bringing people into the museum. You know, that's why they have free admission, because they don't want to have any barriers to people being able to get into the museum. And from the corporate side, there is nothing that we would want more than to get as many of the employees and their families down there as often as possible. So it's, you know, it's telling the story and getting the feet in the door.
That's a great foot feet in the door. And I'm glad you brought up that it is free. So it's one of those treasures. And I know there are so many great arts facilities, but a lot of them you do have to pay for admission. That's one thing that I've always really appreciated about DMA, is it truly genuinely is accessible to anyone. And no one, you know, not that anyone should be embarrassed, you know, that they don't have the funds to visit a museum, but that's not even a consideration when you go into the DMA. And I think that that's really one of the most wonderful, you know, absolutely wonderful things about it, you know. So yes, Thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, and when you walk in the door of the DMA, one thing that I've always noticed when I go in is the diversity of people that are in there. I mean, you've got all ages in there, and, you know, all backgrounds coming into the museum. It, you know, it is definitely not a stuffy place at all. It's a place where people, you know, enjoy to come, bring their friends, bring their family. You can see that when you're in the lobby. It's really wonderful.
Absolutely. And to be inspired. Yeah. And Andy, please go. And Andy, please share. You know, I'd love your thoughts, and especially because you've been on the corporate side and done this relationship for a decade and a half. You know, I'd love for you to maybe add a little bit about, you know, what creates that staying power between an organization and a company, a nonprofit organization and a company, to really create a great long-term corporate nonprofit partnership.
Sure. And before I get to that, I just want to add back onto your free admission comments that it's gotten even better, because the DMA recently received a grant to provide free admission to the ticketed exhibitions one Sunday a month. So there were, you know, it's free admission to go to the general or the permanent collection. Well, now once a month, you can go for each of these ticketed exhibitions. So again, wonderful ways to reach out and provide access to everyone in our community. But I think, you know, for me, a couple of things stick out in terms of a really good nonprofit relationship. Again, it's more than just writing a check. I think sponsorships, support of nonprofits are just like a relationship. You have to have honest, candid conversations. Now, I work for a company of engineers, and we don't like hearing everything is wine and roses. We like to solve problems, and we want our nonprofits to come to us and tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if things aren't going well, you know, no one ever likes to talk about bad news, but that's fine. Be honest with us. Tell us what is wrong. But more than that, tell us what your plan is to fix it. And, you know, certainly we've seen a lot of problems that we've had in the arts community that's happening nationally with reduced attendance and the like due to the pandemic. But I'm so pleased with what I see is really innovative ways of approaching things that our nonprofit partners have been doing. And so be able to go in and sit down and just have a great conversation, not just woe is me, but hey, this is an issue. Here's how we're addressing it. I think that's really key. Also, getting back to the point about having people involved, I think certainly getting getting that deeper level of involvement with the DMA, for example, having folks on the board is great. And I totally agree with Paul, getting our employees out to experience these wonderful arts facilities and venues we have in our city, and these organizations that are bringing such life and vibrancy to it is key. We're not a business to business company, so we're not looking for big brand exposure or trying to get customers and that sort of thing. Really, for us, it's about philanthropy, but also we do want our employees to know what we're doing and see what we're doing in the community, so they're proud to work for us and that our neighbors would want to have us in the city. So that is important, but I think it gets back to that relationship you have with the organizations.
Well, the one thing, and I'm really glad because I don't think anyone's ever brought this up on our show before, the importance of just being honest and authentic with, you know, if everything doesn't have to be perfect all the time. And in fact, if you're saying everything's perfect all the time, that actually may be more of a red flag than really being 360 and really allowing an organization to come in. You know, that was the first thing. But the second thing is, I love that TI, like you said, you don't have to do it for marketing branding exposure. You do it more. It sounds like you all are doing, you know, your philanthropic involvement as more of a company culture thing to create something great internally. And, you know, it's really important for people thinking with corporate sponsors. It's not just the ones that, you know, are obvious that need to do it for marketing exposure, but ones that will culturally resonate with what you're doing. And I love that it's more of an engineering science-based organization combining with an arts organization. And that really creates, you know, a great relationship that allows TI to stretch, but it also allows the DMA to stretch. And I think that's, you know, amazing that you brought that up. And, you know, what's also amazing is, you know, you two have supported so many different things over the years. So, you know, I want to give, you know, applaud you both for that, but you've also supported things in a variety of different, you know, we'll call them nonprofit verticals, whether it's visual arts, it's performing arts, human rights organizations. Paul, I'd like for you to start with this question, but how do you approach creating successful nonprofit fundraising events in different categories? Because what you may do for DMA, you may not do for an event such as, say, DIFA, as an example.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we approach these is, you know, first of all, you look at what is the mission of the organization? Because, you know, if you're going to be doing a gala or a ball or any of these sort of things to support the organization, it needs to be about the organization and what it does. It is never about the co-chairs. We are the least interesting part of any of these events. So, you know, centering it on what is the mission of the organization, whether it's the theater or the Dallas Museum of Art or, you know, some of the other civil rights groups that we do. And then, you know, making sure that the event itself reflects that mission. You know, it embodies it. It reminds people of what they're there to support. You know, specific to the art ball, the museum and us made a deliberate decision to hold the event inside the museum rather than outside in a big tent, because people want to be there in the museum by the art, adjacent to the beautiful art that, you know, is the DMA. So, you know, that's really where you want to approach it from the, you know, the mission, so that people, you know, feel like when they come to these events that they are part of the organization that they're supporting that night. So,
you know, Fan, I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I especially love, and I want to talk about this a little bit more. What makes the DMA Art Ball special is it is held within the museum. So, you know, Andy, we can start with you, but I'd love for you to kind of share some tips, or what advice would you give to an organization looking to hold their signature fundraising event or gala inside their actual physical space?
Oh, I think if at all possible, it's a must, you know, because you really get the feel of the organization there. I mean, the symphony, for example, being able to be in the Meyerson Symphony Center and being surrounded by that beautiful architecture. And then you go in after dinner and have a concert by one of the great symphonies of the world. You, you, you can't replicate that outside of being there. The Dallas Theater Center, when you can go into the Wiley Theater and be able to not only have a nice meal, but be able to be in this extremely innovative performing space and see it transformed and have actors from the Broadway Resident Acting Company come out and perform in that space. And then to be in the DMA surrounded by this beautiful art and in this beautiful building as well. I just think it adds such a level of the feeling, the mission of the organization. And while, yes, while you could have an event somewhere else or even outside in a tent, like it was done for a while, can be very successful. But I just think it's just a little extra icing on the cake when you can bring it inside the facility, because then you really feel, even just with the meetings I do with TI Foundation, my board chair and I, we like to go out to the nonprofits and visit with them in their facilities. You just get a different, you get a real sense of what they're about just by being in their space versus them always coming to yours.
That's, you know, I love how you answer that, because it really flows really nicely into the next question that I really had for you all. And that is, you know, what is, you know, DMA in particular has probably one of the, I'd say in the state of Texas, probably one of the top 5 to 10 passionate followings. I mean, people really want to go to this event year in and year out. So I love to hear, you know,
we're hoping that.
Well, it is, and truly it is. And I hear, you know, all the time people ask about it, not just in Dallas with people I talk to, but people in other cities throughout Texas. So, you know, Paul, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, you know, what can an organization or a person do to really create a devoted following for their annual gala or their annual signature fundraising event, that it's something that everyone just clamors to attend every single year?
Well, I mean, certainly if you make sure that it is a fun event, you know, good food, good time, limited speeches. You know, nobody goes to any of these events to hear speakers. It's, you know, they're going to spend time with their friends, have a nice meal, have some good entertainment. You know, one of the nice things about Art Ball is, in addition to supporting the, you know, the incredible art at the DMA, it's also very much a fashion forward event, and Dallas loves that kind of thing. And you know, certainly does a great job with it. So it's a, you know, it's an opportunity to get together with your friends, to get dressed up, to know you will have an exceptional meal, to be surrounded by this incredible art, you know, the entertainment, the venue, all of it will combine to make it just a, you know, one of those kinds of evenings that you will look back on as a highlight and say to yourself, I want to go again next year.
Absolutely. And there are very few organizations I know of that theme better than you all do. And I completely agree with you that that's one of your really big secrets to getting people coming back year after year. And every year when I, you know, get photos to write about it, it is amazing what a story and event can tell by its clothes. And DMA really does that, I think, really just about as good, if not better, really, than anybody. And, you know, I'd love for you all to, you know, talk a little bit about theming and just how important that is in creating a successful event. I'd like each of you to answer, but I'd like Andy to start with this one.
Well, I'll start, but I think when we talk about this year's theme, I got to give credit to Paul. He's the one who thought of it, and he really does a much better job of me explaining the why we chose the one we did. But, you know, I think a theme, it gets partially back to what I was talking before about the culture of the organization or what the organization's about. And you think about what are the things that are unique to this organization, and that you build on that, and there will, or what's a real strength of the organization, and you can build upon that. And the themes allow you to do things creatively to wrap around that. And it makes it not be a cookie cutter event, I guess is maybe a way to look at it too. While there are certain elements, of course, that are maybe the same year in and year out to one extent. It gives the, like for the folks who are doing our design Todd events, it gives them some creative license to go off and develop colors and graphics and lighting and different elements to, again, back what Paul said, making it unique and making it a memorable experience. But Paul, I wanted to defer to you to talk about this year's theme. If Rob, not to hijack your podcast, but
please do. I was just going to say, how is this your brainchild? Like, what, where did this idea come from, Paul? I'd love for you to start with that and then, you know, go from there with the theme.
Well, you know, having been around the DMA for most of my life, I've always had a sense of, you know, it is its importance to Dallas. I would say in the last decade, and definitely coming out of COVID, the DMA has just been accelerating in terms of the programs that it's doing, the collections that it has. So the theme for this year is momentum, because the DMA has momentum. It is moving forward. There are great things happening. It is, you know, part of a, you know, the beating heart of our arts district. And the, you know, the excitement, the energy, you know, momentum just felt natural in terms of the theme for this year. And that, you know, that also leads towards, there are great things, you know, coming too. So it's, you know, it's not just this moment in time. It is, you know, it is good and getting better.
That's amazing. And, you know, one way, you know, to do, you know, to propel momentum, you know, especially from an events perspective, and Dallas, I would say of all the cities that I work with, you know, on a consistent basis, Dallas does an exceptionally good job at really drawing in high profile individuals or celebrities to be a part of an event that ties to the organization in a really organic way. So I love, you know, Andy, I'd love for you to feel this. You know, what is a piece of advice you would give to an organization looking to have a celebrity or high profile person at their event? And maybe share, if you're able to divulge, you know, who that person might be this year.
Not going to divulge that part because
you can't blame me for asking.
but yeah, I mean, thinking about, well, first of all, if you do want to invite a celebrity or something there, and I'm again thinking of other events where I've been involved as well, you know, these are, you want to have a celebrity who's accessible and not just will show up on stage and give a speech and leave, because that's a really great opportunity for your VIP donors, your sponsors, that little meet and greet, the, you know, step and repeat opportunity there that they really enjoy. So I think you want to have someone who does. Also, I think you want to have a celebrity or who believes in the mission, and they're not just in, you know, I know sometimes people pay for celebrities to come to things, but you really want someone who believes that mission. I think back on some events I've attended. There was one last year, I'm going to draw a blank on it, but the speaker was had a personal story about the cause. And so they're really connected. So I think that, again, we've talked a lot about being authentic as well, and some of those other conversations we had about the relationship, I think that holds true here. So you want, and don't also be careful on budget, because you don't want somebody, again, coming in doing this just for a fee or paying some exorbitant amount that you can't recoup it with your revenue.
Those are both all really, really good pieces of advice. And, you know, and I know you had mentioned, you know, Todd Fisk is planning the event, and he was actually a guest on this podcast earlier. And, you know, it's all about the roller coaster ride, as he likes to call it. So, you know, I'm really glad, you know, that you brought that up. And that actually kind of leads me into the next question is, you know, what, tell us about what a guest will experience at this year, you know, at this year's Art Ball at a high level. And feel free for either or both of you to jump in.
Well, this is where we talk over each other, because we both are so excited about it. I mean, really, from the moment you arrive, it is going to be an exceptional evening. The way that it's laid out, people will enter through the entrance, the front entrance of the museum. You've got your usual step and repeat. You go into a cocktail setting, just a chance to gather with your friends, get ready for the evening. you know, after the cocktail hour is over, you go into the main dinner. There's going to be some entertainment, you know, spinning some music. We're going to have a live auction back this year. So we'll have that. We will have very, very, very brief remarks. And then at the conclusion of the dinner, arguably one of the most exciting things is going to be the after party. Now, Andy and I attend enough of these things and have been to, you know, plenty of galas where usually the after party is the point where all the people our age go home and go to bed, and all the people half our age stay and dance to a DJ. This is going to be so much better than that. This is going to be one of those times where you pay extra to have the babysitter or the grandparents look after
you. Do not want to miss this.
Yeah. So you can stay late and have a great time. I think arguably the after party is going to compete with the main event in terms of excitement.
So, on the after party,
too much at this point, but it is going to be one heck of an evening, and I can absolutely promise that anybody that comes will be wanting to sign up for the next year.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Andy, you were about to add on to that. So, sorry, Rob.
Go ahead.
Couple things to add on to what Paul mentioned, and we got permission to share this with you and your listeners, that after party we're talking about. If you've heard of the bar, Bimmelman's Bar at the Carlisle in New York City. Mm-hmm. So we're going to transform what will be the reception when you come into the dinner. We're transforming that space for the after party into something that is inspired by Bimmelman's in New York. So it's going to have martini carts, and we're going to have wonderful entertainment for folks. We also, during the dinner itself, are bringing the live auction back this year. We have two wonderful live auction chairs, Christina Jafar and Catalina Gonzalez Jorba, and they're working on some really wonderful items, experiences that folks can bid on. Not going to be long, you know, 5 or 6 items, so it won't take up the entire night. We've got some wonderful spirit sponsors in Castra Elion and Maestro Dobel, our champagne sponsor. Cassandra One and the R2 catering team will do the menu. Already mentioned, Todd Events is doing the design. And many thanks to our presenting sponsor, Neiman Marcus, for their terrific support of this. So it's going to be a really fun evening. And I think we'll probably said all we can about stuff, saying it. You don't want to miss it.
And I'll drop one more bit of excitement on it. If you are familiar with Bimmelman's at the Carlisle in New York, one of the most notable things about it is the paintings on the wall, very whimsical scenes of New York. We are having some special art done for the after party event that is going to replicate that, but it's going to have a Dallas spin on it. So that it's going to be one of those things that people will definitely, you know, love and remember for a long time.
That's incredible, you know, and start to finish. One, I've gone to events before where you transform something into a bar. I went to something a couple of years ago where the American Friends of the Louvre converted the Hemingway, you know, did a Hemingway bar. So I know that that's going to be a rocking special after party, because those are truly like one of those almost once in a lifetime majestic sort of, you know, sort of things and sort of experiences. So, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up. The second thing that you all brought up that I think is interesting is, and it's something from an event production perspective, is you're basically converting where cocktails was to what the after party is, right? And doing that in a quick turnaround. So I'd love one of you to just maybe share, what's a piece of advice you would give to an organization looking to do something that bold, to where they're taking one space and they're turning it around in just two, or, you know, in a couple of hours, to be something completely different?
Well, I would say, you know, there are amazing things that can be done just with lighting, you know, making sure that you have the right lighting in the space. You know, obviously they're not going to be able to, you know, move walls and floors completely. But, you know, being able to change out the lighting, change out the colors, those kinds of things should be reasonably easy to do. Now, I'm not going to say that what they're going to be doing in transformation is easy, because I don't think it is going to be easy, but it's going to be incredible.
That's fantastic. And you know, it's a feat that you can do that. And if anyone can do that effortlessly, it is Todd Event. So
That's
I
true.
know that it will be pristine and wonderfully done. So, you know, I want to actually shift this next question. I actually want to go back to the two of you. And I'd love each of you to share what's a piece of advice you would give to somebody to what's the secret in successfully co-chairing a gala or signature fundraising event with your spouse? So, who'd like to? I'm going to let you two choose which one fields that one first.
Oh gosh. Well, go ahead, Paul. You started.
I would say that the key to it is figuring out what each of you brings to the table in terms of strengths and allowing one another to go with those. While some of the, we share a lot of the same interests, but we approach problems in different ways. Andy is more of a big picture ideas person, where I tend to be fairly linear in my thinking. I think in sequence. And so what we can do is we can work together to come up with, what is the idea? And then my role is, okay, how do we break this into steps to get it to see through the execution of it? So, just figuring out where you fit into it. Then being able to, sh share the planning process with one another.
That's great
Yeah,
advice. And Andy, go ahead.
I agree with what Paul said. I think, one of the things maybe unique to us is that we've worked together on volunteer projects for all the 33 and a half years we've been together, and then worked professionally at the same company for 20 plus years. And so we're kind of used to each other and how we work together. So,
Love that.
if you'd asked me this question a long time ago, I might have a different answer, but I think Paul is exactly right. You know what strengths each person brings. And while we also have, many shared friends and colleagues in common, there are also some that we either have stronger relationships with or unique. And so leveraging our respective networks in terms of the asks and other involvement with events is key. And I think it, again, going back to what I said earlier about those conversations and relationships, there's every relationship you have to have honest, open communication. And so if we don't agree, then we need to talk about it. But they're solvable issues, certainly, but you just have to have the good conversation, I mean, good communication, and let each other shine.
You know, I love both of your answers. And there was, in addition to communication, there was really another undercurrent that I got in listening to both of you. And that is that, respect one another's strengths and let people lead, let one half of the couple lead on their strengths. And you both gave those basically, and they were different answers, but there was definitely that undercurrent with it. So anyone listening wanting to share something with your spouse, just think about those things. And we're about out of time, but I want to end, and Andy, you can answer first, and Paul, you can answer second, but what is a piece of advice you would give to someone looking to chair their first nonprofit event?
Well, I would say I approach an event just like I do my job. And we've been asked to say, okay, we'll do this, or I'll do this, but here's the deal. We're going to do it the TI way. We're going to have a plan. We're going to have a budget. We're going to measure, and we're going to execute. And that's the advice I would give someone, is just make sure that, you've got a really good plan in place, and you know where you're going, you know what your goals are, and that you execute to that. And when the plan changes, you make a new plan. But you just have to have, I think, that discipline, that structure in place if you want to be successful.
Perfect. And Paul.
Well, I agree with what Andy said 100%. What I would add to that is you've got to always remember it's about the organization. It is never about you. Never about you. So, listen to the staff, take their advice, because they live it and breathe it every day. They've got the history of it. of what works well and what appeals to their audience. You know, certainly, the, you know, anytime you're chairing something like this, you want to bring in your own creativity and your, you know, your own ideas. But, you know, always remember that it, you know, the core is the organization, and you need to make sure that the event itself is about the organization, not about you.
That's a mic drop moment if I've ever heard of one. So, you know, thank you both, Andy, Paul. I mean, this has been a wonderful conversation. You've both brought just so much wonderful advice and wonderful insight. And I know it's going to be a spectacular night in Dallas. So again, thank you both for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
We'll be there. So with that, Art Ball 2024, benefiting the Dallas Museum of Art, will be on April 13th, 2024 at the Dallas Museum of Art in Dallas, Texas. For more information, please visit dma.org. And that will do it for this episode of Fun and Fundraising. I'm your host, Rob Giardinelli, reminding you to keep it fun, keep it interesting, and your guests will have a great time. Have a great day, everyone, and take care.